Yeah. Dave, just tell us a little bit about yourself. You got married to Lainey back in October, so you're still in the honeymoon stage of your marriage, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. I think the colloquial term is loved up. Very much enjoying that. And as you say, I sort of work part-time for the church, work part-time as well for a pensions company, just sort of over the way there when I'm not busy being a dutiful husband.
He's taller than me. Thanks very much indeed. I'll hand it over to you, Dave.
Thanks, Tim, and thanks everyone for coming. It's really good to see you here. I hope you're enjoying the coffee and the conversation, and Phil Dand, and later on Duncan Rugvi, whose music I'm a big fan of. We'll get back to that later. But we're going to spend the next few minutes thinking about this subject of love in a broken society. And what I'm basically going to try and do for the next 10 minutes or so is answer two questions. What is the problem? And what is the solution? What's the problem? What's the solution? So, what's the problem? Well, is there even a problem? Actually, I don't think you'd have to spend too long browsing the newspapers to conclude that there is something broken about our society. I think it was probably The Sun who first labelled our nation Broken Britain, but the phrase has since been picked up by politicians, by the media at large. I'm sure many of you have heard that phrase kind of kicking around. And every new social scandal is a symptom of this broken society. Whether it's Alfie Patton, who became a father at 13, or the tragic death of baby P a couple of months ago, or Karen Matthews up in Dewsbury kidnapping her own daughter, or the shooting of 11-year-old Reece Jones in Liverpool. And now those are the high-profile cases, the extreme ones that make the headlines. But actually, I think this brokenness is part of ordinary day-to-day life for many of us, having to deal with broken families or problems with neighbours, or just, for some people, just a general sense of loneliness and isolation. There doesn't really seem to be very much community around for a lot of people in 21st century Britain. And if anything, it looks like religion only makes things worse, because religion just causes divisions and hatred and bitterness and fractures our society even further. Now, I could easily spend the next 10 minutes just bombarding you with statistics to ram home the message that there's something broken about our society, although I'm not sure how constructive that would be. But we're not stupid, are we here? We know that there are things that are wrong with even a great city like Sheffield. I love Sheffield, but Sheffield has plenty of problems with crime and violence and homelessness and drug abuse and prostitution and unemployment and poverty. And those local problems, I think, pale in comparison to global ones. We don't just live in a broken society, we live in a broken world. A world that's full of poverty and war and suffering and injustice. So, what can we do about it? Well, I think we can respond in one of three ways. We can deny the situation, we can accept the situation, or we can try and change the situation. And the first two, I don't really think are very satisfactory. So to deny that there's a problem, well, to me that just seems intellectually dishonest. Maybe we're tempted to ignore the problem, but actually I'd suggest really that's just a more subtle way of doing denial. Okay, we aren't saying that there's nothing wrong, but we're living as if there's nothing wrong. We're ignoring the problem. And actually, even though I'm sometimes guilty of ignoring the brokenness in society, I really don't think it's a satisfactory response to what we see around us. So option two, well, we could accept the situation, couldn't we? We could say, well, sure, crime and poverty and all the associated problems that go along with that are really just inevitable. Maybe in an ideal world those things wouldn't exist, but we're not in an ideal world, so we've just got to deal with it. But if denial is intellectually dishonest, actually, to me, that second approach, acceptance, well, that seems morally dishonest. How can I really look at the messed up world around me and honestly think that things are good enough? How can I settle for that? It doesn't really seem very loving, does it? Which only leaves us with one option, and that's to try and change the situation. And I guess that's what many of us are trying to do through campaigning, through giving to charities, through direct involvement in social action projects. But how do we fix a broken society? How do we do it? Is love the answer? That's what our title for tonight sort of suggests. And if you ask the right pop stars, that's what you'd think it is. So, for instance, Michael Jackson's song, Heal the World, a classic which hopefully some of you are familiar with. The lyrics of that are as follows. I can't read these without feeling a little bit sick inside, but maybe I'm too cynical. Anyway, there's a place in your heart, and I know that it is love. And this place could be much brighter than tomorrow. If you really try, you'll find there's no need to cry. In this place, you'll feel there's no hurt or sorrow. There are ways to get there. If you care enough for the living, make a little space, make a better place. Heal the world. Make it a better place for you and for me and the entire human race. Whatever you think of Michael Jackson, that's a nice dream, isn't it? You know, love healing the world. But it seems like just that, a dream. It doesn't really seem very realistic. You see, a broken society isn't a new problem. Humans have been trying to fix it for hundreds, even thousands of years. And we don't seem to have got very far. You know, we try and have that Michael Jackson attitude and apply love like a bandage to the wound, but it doesn't really seem to be enough, because as a race we really don't seem to be all that good at loving each other, even though, you know, we place a really high value on love. It's brilliant being married to somebody with whom I'm in love, and I'm sure many of you in a room get to, you know, have experienced that. But it's still, I think you have to say, generally as a society, we're not great at loving each other. Sure, there are some ways in which, for some people, life is better than it's ever been. But there are some ways in which it is much worse. And we seem powerless to change it. And here's where I want to bring God into the equation. Because Christians believe in a God who is powerful enough to change the situation. So what is God doing about a broken society? Is he ignoring it? Is he accepting it? You know, does he just look at the baby peace story and shrug his shoulders and say, oh, well, you know, that's just the way it is? Or are his hands tied? Is he powerless to do anything about it? I think it can be tempting to look at our broken society and conclude from that that maybe God doesn't exist. Or that if he does exist, you know, he's quite a weak and a distant God who doesn't love people and doesn't want to get involved. Well, that's not the sort of God that Christians believe in. We believe in a God who says in the Bible, I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery and wrong. That's just one example of that sort of claim that God makes about himself. I could have picked plenty more. And we don't just believe in a God who feels that way about suffering and injustice and brokenness. We believe in a God who's actually in the business of fixing things. A God whose big plan for the world at the end of time is this. This is a promise that God makes sort of right at the end of the Bible, like the last but one page. Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. I will dwell with them, and they will be my people, and I myself will be with them as their God. I will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more, for the former things have passed away. I think, regardless of whether you're a Christian or not, I think that sounds attractive, doesn't it? You know, to believe in a God who is passionately concerned for social justice, who loves people enough to make a new society where there's no more death or mourning or crying or pain. But, you know, is that just God doing a bit of Michael Jackson wishful thinking? How can we know that God actually feels that way? Or that he is going to act in that way, that he'll keep that big promise that he's made? I mean, sure, those are some fine-sounding words, but are they just words? Well, as Christians, we believe that God has demonstrated his love for our broken society, and he's demonstrated his commitment to fixing it. And he's demonstrated both of those things in Jesus. So here's how it works. Jesus was a real guy who lived in Israel 2,000 years ago, and who in his early 30s started going around saying stuff like this. These are the words of Jesus. He's actually quoting part of the Old Testament, the first half of the Bible. This is what he said. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. I've come to fix things, Jesus is saying. And he wasn't all mouth and no trousers, because he went and did a bunch of stuff to back it up. His society was pretty broken as well. And he showed his love, and he showed that he was God in the flesh by going and healing the blind and feeding the hungry. And even on a couple of occasions, raising the dead. He went and fixed things in a way that only God could, and in a way that God had promised to do. But then, of course, Jesus went and got himself crucified. and it looked like the job wasn't finished. So, you know, was Jesus really just no more powerful than any other philanthropist or do-gooder? Was he kind of the Bob Geldof of his day, only sort of without the rock connections, who, you know, he did what he could to try and fix things and make the world a better place, but ultimately he found that the task was just too big for him? Well, I want to present an alternative view. Christians believe, and Jesus himself taught, that on the cross, Jesus was dealing with the real underlying problem that causes our broken society, the problem that afflicts each and every one of us, the problem of people. What is the real problem in society? Why can't we all just love each other and get along? Well, I want to suggest that it is something to do with the nature of people, specifically the fact that people tend to live for themselves. And that sort of kind of me-first living, that's why I'm going to label it, me-first living. In fact, anything that isn't God-first living is what the Bible calls sin. So I think we can see how it works. If you try and make a society out of a bunch of individuals who are deeply committed, whether they admit it or not, to me-first living, you know, who are trapped in that mentality, it won't be long, will it, before something breaks. Because me-first always means you second. And God has created a world in which actions have consequences. So me-first living, you second living, will inevitably break society. So you might be thinking, how does Jesus dying on a cross deal with the problem of me first living? Well, if God's big plan is to create a new perfect society, he can't just fill it with me first individuals, because we'll only go and break it again. People need to be changed. They need to be remade. They need to be wired for you first and God first living. They need to be like Jesus, because actually he's the only one who ever managed to perfectly do God-first living. So here's what's going on at the cross. Basically, there is a swap. So Jesus faces the consequences of our me-first living, the punishment of death and isolation and separation from God. And on the other hand, anyone who trusts in Jesus, who believes that the swap worked, gets to enjoy the consequences of God-first living, life with God forever, in his perfect, fixed society. And so that we won't go and ruin that society, God transforms Christians to be like Jesus and to have the same unconditional love that he shows us. Now, if you're here, you probably do know some Christians, or you are one, and you probably therefore know that we're not very much like Jesus, although some of us do have good beards, like Pete and Paul down here. And that's because we're a long way from the finished article, and we're not going to get there in this life. But just as Christians are like little previews of the people that will one day be, the Christian society, the church, is meant to be a preview of God's new, perfect society. So how do we know God is going to keep that massive promise he makes to create a new society that is fixed? Well, he's already created a new society full of people who ought to be characterized by love, and that is the church. That's why for the last 2,000 years, the church has been at the forefront of a lot of social action and attempts to fix all this brokenness. Sure, we don't always get it right, and as Christians, we've got to admit that there are times where we've got it fairly horribly wrong. But we believe in a God who loved us enough to die for us, and that has to compel us to go and love others. That's why, you know, if you pick up a Bible and read the accounts of the early church, you'll find that the accounts are of a community that was characterized by generosity and unity. You know, a community where slaves and masters were getting along, where Jews and Greeks were getting along, where everyone was sort of contributing so that the material needs of everyone there were met. You see, the broken society we live in should make us cry out that something isn't right. That this can't be, it can't be the way that it's supposed to be. And God's new society, the church, should be on hand to show people how things are supposed to be and to tell people how to get there. And I hope you'll agree, it's a really attractive proposition. So, love in a broken society. What's the problem? Well, ultimately, the Christian belief is that the problem is people. So is love the solution? Well, yes, it is. But it's the love of God, first and foremost. A God who loved the world so much that he gave his only son so that whoever believes in him will not perish, but will have eternal life forever in that new, perfect, fixed society.